Thank you, Daniel. Well, thanks to the organizers for the invitation too. I feel particularly at home at the Fields Institute because the software that you're going to see now, you can also have it on all the computers here in the Fields Institute. Just in the main menu, the software GNU Techmax is already installed. So if you want to try, please go ahead. So I'm going to be interested in machine computations with the trend series. You have already seen a talk by Lau about the model theory of trend series, and he already gave some definitions and so on. I will, well, give a bit more details later on. In any case, we're going to look at infinity all the time, so x throughout the talk will be infinitely large. And well, if one writes down some, well, seemingly complicated expressions like that, which you can naturally build up by exponentiation logarithms, x, field operations, and so on, then one can wonder for such a function, what is the asymptotic behavior at infinity? Can we decide, for instance, whether it's infinitely large, whether it's positive? More generally, one might be interested in the resolution of differential equations. So for instance, if I put up an equation like this here, well, what possibly could be some the asymptotic behavior of solutions of this equation at infinity? And even more generally, one might wonder about the asymptotic resolution of more general functional equations. So here you see an example. So I'm not really going to treat the resolution of equations, but nevertheless, if they are in some special form, the equations, then we'll see that, for instance, for the equations which we have here, at the end we will see that we can find some solutions of those. Now of course, this may seem a bit wild, expressions like this, but in fact, in applications, these really naturally can come up. For instance, in combinatorics, when you want to count certain objects, then you have to construct generating functions, and these generating functions are construct the exp and log naturally correspond to certain constructions on combinatorial structure. So it's very natural, in fact, to look at these kinds of expressions. There are even much more violent types of equations, like, for instance, the iterator of the logarithm, which satisfies the functional equation that f of log x is equal to fx minus 1. So it decreases more slowly than any iteration of log. And even this function actually naturally comes up in the very basic operation of integer multiplications, which is several thousand years old, right? And the best known complexity nowadays for integer multiplication involves this function. So, these things which may seem wild maybe are not that wild as well, as they may seem from time to time. Oh, I can think. So, still looking at infinity. So let's see some concrete examples of trend series. So I wrote down some. Here you, all these things are rather explicit, right? So if you just form expressions like this, then you can naturally expand them like this at infinity. And as soon as you have things which involve 1 over x and e power minus x, then any power of x is, well, e power x grows faster than any power of x. So immediately you will get expansions which look like this, where the support is not isomorphic to the omega, the ordinal of natural numbers anymore, but something larger here, omega 2, for instance. On the trend series, you have many operations. For instance, you can integrate. And this expression here is basically corresponds to the solution of the Euler equation. So you can naturally re-see it like that. So that trend series may also have divergent expansions. Another natural example is the gamma function, which satisfies a functional equation, which has this expansion here. And all the examples which I wrote down here are examples of so-called grid-based trend series, which means that the support is the support of these things. Well, if they're, for instance, if you see them as powers of x, then the exponents are basically contained in something of the form positive integer multiples of a fixed set of positive numbers plus some arbitrary number. So in particular, they are finitely generated. And here, for instance, for the second example, the powers of x and the powers of e power x generate the support. Here we have some more general trend series, which are only well-based. And so, for instance, the zeta function is a trend series. The solution of this functional equation here is a trend series. And so is that one. And the last one, there are even an infinite number of Archimedean classes in the... So... Okay, so Lau already explained that basically the trend series are generalized power series with real coefficients and over some group, totally ordered group of transmonomials. So this is called the dominance relation. It corresponds to the valuation. And these monomials are of a very particular recursive shape. Either they're iterated logarithms, so log k will always mean the k times iterated logarithm, or they are the exponential of simpler trend series, which have purely infinite support. So for instance, if we take this full trend series here, then in Lau's talk we already saw that we can decompose this in those terms which have infinite monomials, a constant monomial, and then infinitesimal monomials there. And yeah, so basically all the transmonomials, you all the time have to think of these as being just exponentials of other trend series which have this purely infinite support. From a computational point of view, it is often useful to have something even more finite and to work with so-called transbases. So in that case, basically in this example we had this x and e power x, and these correspond to different Archimedean classes in the value group. And we're going to take in the trans basis, the first element is going to be just an iterated logarithm of x. And every next element here it's going to be, basically, we're going to see it as the exponential of something which could be expanded with respect to the previous elements. And because these are different Archimedean classes, you can really see this as an element of this power series ring here as something which first can be expanded with respect to the highest, the steepest variable, and then recursively the coefficients with respect to the others. So for instance, transbases could be something like the one you see here. So we start with log x. X is the exponential of log x. X power x is the exponential of x times log x, which can indeed be expanded with respect to these two. And then this thing here is the exponential of x squared over 1 minus x minus 1, which can indeed be expanded with respect to everybody there. What is not allowed is something like this, where now in the exponent here we have something which is actually can only be expanded with elements which are ahead still. But these things necessarily have to be very small, so basically we could just have written this as a Taylor series. So, well, one basic fact about trans series is that if you have such a transbasis, and if you take an arbitrary other grid-based trans series, then you can find a new transbasis which extends the previous one with respect to which this trans series can be expanded. So in a moment we'll see why this is very useful. So now if you want to really compute with trend series, we're going to look at two different ways of doing that. The first way is, well, the completely mathematically correct way to compute with trend series. And if you want to do this, then immediately you have what is called the problem of infinite cancellation. So if you just naively start to expand these things on a formula like this one, then, well, you see you're going to subtract an infinite number of terms which are the same from this expression here, and so you have an infinite number of cancellations. So if you're not careful, then yeah, your algorithm will just run forever. So basically, the way, the classical way of dealing with this situation is the classical approach is as follows. First of all, you have to isolate a class of expressions or solutions to equations for which you want to find these asymptotic expansions. So for instance, we can restrict ourselves to the class of all these x block expressions. And the problem is then to find an asymptotic expansion of any element in this class. And the approach is, first of all, to use an induction on all subformulas of the expression that you want to expand, to progressively compute a transbasis for all these subformulas, and also to ensure that all the coefficients, all these iterated coefficients with respect to your transbasis elements of all these sub-expressions remain in your class. And then, if for this class we have a zero test, then we can check whether these infinite cancellations occur. So let's see this on an example. I think I should make use of this nice technology here. So let's take a simple example like this one. So basically, this means that we're just going to go down the expression tree of this function. So we always start with a transbasis which just contains x, well, x, we can expand that with respect to x, and minus x, we can still expand it. Now, we're taking an exponential. Now, if we take an exponential, then we basically have to look whether the exponent here can be rewritten as linear combinations of existing logarithms of elements here. Now, there's only one, it's log x, and x is not a linear combination of log x. So we basically have to adjoin a new element, which is going to be precisely this thing here, e power x, and then we can expand it. Now, if we just do field operations, then basically nothing interesting happens. So, for instance, there's this expression here, we now know basically how to expand it. And here you see the recursive expansion with respect to e power minus x. So the first term of this formula would be x plus 1 with respect to e power x, and the second term 1 times e power minus x. Now we're going to take the logarithm of this thing. So when doing that, we want to apply this usual formula, which you, I think, maybe also saw in Mao's talk. We first are going to isolate the dominant term of this expression. So since we know how to expand this thing, we can find the dominant term, which here is just x, and we rewrite this whole thing as just being log of x times, well, this thing here. And we know that this is now of the form 1 plus epsilon, so that we can expand that already. Only log of x might not be already in our transbases, so we have to join log of x, and then this thing will just expand like what you see here. So this is now the new expression in E for this thing here. Okay, so some rewriting goes on now, right? As you see. We do the same thing for log x plus 1, and we get this thing here. So x now is just, well, this thing minus that thing. Here it is. So this is the final expression that we find. And we know that this expression can somehow trivially be expanded first with respect to e power x, and then its coefficients with respect to x, and so on. So if we look, well, indeed, the first coefficient with respect to e power minus x is going to be this, so we detect the infinite cancellation, and then we get the further terms. So the general algorithm, you have to be a bit careful, but essentially it's like this. Now, if you want to go a bit want to make these things a bit more systematic, then basically one can use another interesting fact about trend series, which is the fact that they always admit so-called Cartesian representations. So basically these grid-based trend series behave like usual power series. Usual power series with this little change that in the power series you're substituting transmonomials for your variables. So any trend series can be written as here a multivariate, well, actually Lorentz series, which means that it's a power series in Z1 until Zk times some arbitrary monomial in some power product of the Zi here. And in this multivariate Lorentz series, I substituted infinitesimal monomials from my, well, transmonomial group or from my transbasis group inside this F chest. Now, so basically this gives a systematic way of working only with multivariate power series. And then the next step is to find the analog of this class, for instance, of X-block expressions, but now seen as multivariate power series. So the next interesting kind of objects that one can then introduce are so-called Cartesian algebras. This looks very much like O-minimal structures already. So for every k, we are going to fix a sub-algebra Lk then of the multivariate power series. Well, we're going to assume that we have at least the coordinate functions. We're going to assume that we can divide by Z1 whenever this is possible. And we are going to assume that this is stable under substitution whenever defined. So this is just a definition, right? So for instance, one can then look at the smallest Cartesian algebra, which contains the exponential series and which contains the series log of 1 plus z. This class is well defined and very explicit. So one can then try to, compute with this class instead. And if you want also to solve functional equations, algebraic equations to start with, then it's useful to have also an implicit function theorem, and then it's called local community. So this looks very much actually as a power series analog of an O-minimal structure. So now, why is this already interesting? Because we can, so now we're working with power series, and we can hope for giving zero tests for these multivariate power series in a class like the one I described. So take this class, for instance, of all power series in Z1, Z2, etc., which I can construct using ring operations this time, and taking exponentials of infinitesimals and doing this log of 1 plus infinitesimals. Okay? Then whenever you take such an expression, then you can still modify the context a little bit and introduce a polynomial ring where we have these sub-expressions which we see as power series, and we're going to ask that this ring here with this sub-expressions generated by the sub-expressions as polynomials is stable under partial differentiation. So for instance, we can take the ring of these things here. So we take z1, z2, exponential of z1, right? If we differentiate this thing, we remain in the same ring here. Okay? If we now take this one, if we differentiate, we also have to, of course, to divide by 1 over by 1 plus z2. So I also add the inverse here. And if you look at this ring, which naturally comes up when working with these expressions here, these power theories here, then this is stable under all partial derivatives. Okay, and we can formally differentiate in this ring. So now one can wonder, if I have any power series which is in this ring, can we test whether this thing is zero? Okay, so this is zero testing for the functions that we were considering. Now there is there are many algorithms actually for doing this. I'm going to keep to the most simple idea here that one could use in this context. Do you know what Grothner bases are? Anyone who knows what Grothner bases are, please raise your hand. Those who don't know what Grothner bases are, please raise your hand. Shame on you. The fact we're going to use about Grothner bases is that if you have a finite number of polynomials in a polynomial ring, then basically one can compute new generators for the ideal generated by these elements, and then use this to test whether the ideals, in particular, whether two ideals which are generated by a finite number of elements are equal. So this is mainly what we're going to use. This is, well, it's actually a reduced Gruebner basis in that case. So imagine that we want to test that F is zero, right? So this G in that case, if we're simultaneously going to try to prove that F is actually zero, or that found some contradiction in the assumption that F is zero. So we start by taking G will always be a Gruebner basis, which contains, which is at the start just a singlet bomb, and at every point in the algorithm, so far we believe actually that all elements in this G are going to be zero. Okay, so that is the implicit assumption. We believe that all elements in G are zero. So if we believe at the entry that F is zero, then, well, okay, so we start. Well, then if it's zero, of course, if we just evaluate at zero, just take the coefficient at zero, then this must be zero, right? If it's not, well, then definitely something went wrong. And this is precisely when I'm going to return false. So then F definitely will not be zero. Now, if all elements in G are indeed zero, and I take just the partial derivatives of these things, which by assumption are still in the same ring, then of course these elements all should be zero, right? So I'm going to take the reduced Gruebner basis of this thing and let G prime be this thing. Well, if G prime is basically the same thing as G, so nothing changed, what does that mean? That basically means that I now have found some relations which I think to be zero, and basically whenever I take a partial derivative of these elements, there remain linear combinations of the same elements. So they satisfy a system of partial differential equations. And if the initial condition is zero, then there will be a unique solution to this system, which is basically zero. So in that case, the zero test basically succeeds. Now, of course, you see in this algorithm Gruebner basis coming up. And yeah, as everybody who knows about Gruebner basis knows, is that actually you want to forget about Gruebner basis. You never want to use them. So this is going to be computationally much too hard. And also, if at least here we still could compute, but if we now want to do the same thing for the constants, of course, if I'm going to expand some x plus function at infinity, there are also constants coming up. And I also have to decide whether the constants which are involved in the expansions are going to be zero or not. Now this is even harder. So Daniel Richardson proved that basically there exists an algorithm for doing that if Shanwell's conjecture is true. So then what should we do? Should we all become number theorists and try to prove this Shanwell's conjecture? That's a possibility. You can spend your life on trying to prove that e power pi is irrational, for instance. But you can also become a model theorist, of course, and trying to see whether there exist at least classes of constants with x block things where this happens. There has been some progress, but unfortunately, for the moment, by Wilkie, for instance. The only classes for which you can decide now I think for the moment are precisely those numbers which you never encounter in practice. So there still has to be a lot of progress to be made on this kind of things. So yeah, what can we do then? Well, we can of course just ignore the problem too, and just say, well, something is zero. For instance, if I evaluate it up to 100 digits, then it's zero. But okay, then we're getting on sloppy grounds, right? As we say in Dutch, this is koffiedik kijken. And this of course, yeah, as soon as you start to do this, you're not really proving anything anymore. So then one can have two attitudes, just miss this whole attitude and say, well, this is not what we want. But you can also say, well, if we start now to be inexact anyway, let's push this a bit further. So that's the second part now. So if we're going to do dangerous mathematics, why not really make it like that? Okay. Yeah, so basically the point when implementing these algorithms for me was that basically I spent 10 times as much time implementing zero tests than doing actual asymptotic expansions, which is a bit of pity, right? Because the thing which interests us is computations with train theories. And these zero tests, for these zero tests, I also need the fact that I'm all the time in this Cartesian algebras and so on. So moreover, I was completely restricted to grid-based train theories. Very naturally, there are also solutions to functional equations which are not grid-based, and we want to compute with that too. So, a new approach to this whole topic is, to become a numerical analyst, one may try to impose the spirit of computer algebra to analysis, but one can also try to go the other way around and see whether some tricks of numerical analysis can be used actually for formal objects. So let's try to do this. And so basically, a trend series, you can think of it as being obtained by a process of successive approximations. And now one way to do this process is the more or less straightforward way, where you start with the first, the second, and term, and just approximate as the terms come in. But then, as we have seen, you have these supports with omega terms and things which can cancel out infinitely often and so on. So this is not necessarily the best way to approximate a trend series. But in fact, one can very well approximate in many other ways. So we basically just want to see. We're going to look at the nth approximation of a trend series as just being some polynomial with where the monomials are in this ring of transmonomials, just finite linear combinations. We're actually going to assume that we know how to compute with these transmonomials. Of course, this is going to be more or less recursive afterwards. So then, what is going to be the condition? Well, basically, it's just going to be that if this thing is a good approximator of F, it just means that term-wise, if you look at the coefficients, that term-wise, these things are going to converge ultimately to the real trend series. So let's see, for instance, if we take x plus 1 over x, then we might just take, for the nth approximation, we might just take this thing here, right? And then, well, if we have these approximators, it's very easy to perform operations. For if we want to multiply, well, we just multiply nth approximations. Now, this is actually not necessarily the best way to do these things. Another way to think about this is to introduce the concept of expanders, where now instead of directly approximating the sum, well, the approximating by an nth, where we're basically going to consider the nth approximation as a sum of other of coefficients of approximations. Well, and what is going to be the nice thing about viewing rather the nth approximation as the sum of earlier approximations and one difference at the nth time, that is that basically we can now form the generating function of all these approximations. So we had already a trend series, right? But now we're also going to encode this whole approximation process itself by a new series. This is why I call this meta expansion. So if we take this x of 1 over x, typically the approximator as a generating function would just be this thing. And the fact that at the end I am obtaining the trend series I'm interested in, it just means substituting 1 for z. And now, instead of when I want to do operations, I can again multiply, but now I can multiply as generating functions. Now, of course, these two ways of doing the same thing are related. I can easily, if I have an approximator here, I can easily, by taking the differences here, find an expander and the other way around. But when doing operations, these things are not completely the same. For instance, if I'm multiplying 1 over x times 1 over 1 minus e minus power minus x, this one thing here, and you see all these terms here coming in. If you work the way we apply the formula we did with approximators, then at stage one we will get these terms, and then we get the terms you see there, okay, because we were multiplying the whole starts. But if you work with generating functions, then we would get this behavior here. And this is nice, actually, because it means that we have much less terms. So from the computational point of view, this is much better. Now, what about other operations? So, for instance, if you want to compose on the left with a power series, for instance, I have an infinitesimal trend series here, and I want to exponentiate it, phi being the formal power series of x. Well, then just if I multiply an expander as a generating function by z, the value for z equal 1 remains the same. I just delay the computation a little bit. But the fact that when I multiply by z means that I can now substitute this thing into phi and just do the composition like that. And this gives me an expander for the composition. Now, What about, for instance, restriction of support if you want to compute a purely infinite part of a trend series? Well, just term-wise, take the purely infinite part. So, if we know how to do this, then of course we can compute exponentials, because we can now just write the usual formula, the decomposition into the purely infinite part, the constant part, infinitesimal part. This thing is a power series, we know how to do that. This is just a constant, and this thing will actually be a monomial. Let's do the logarithm. How can we do the logarithm? Well, if we are at the nth stage of approximation, the nth approximation, we can write it as a dominant term times 1 plus something which is infinitesimal. So at the nth stage, at least, I can compute the logarithm then. Now, of course, these dominant terms may change throughout the approximation process. I'm not sure that I immediately at the third stage already found the appropriate dominant term of my trend series. So what we do in that case is just a technique of, well, formally we can just take a diagonal, just define all these objects here, yeah, and then take the nth approximation in the nth element, and this one basically will do the job. In practice, what happens is that, yeah, well, as long as this thing doesn't change, we want to reuse the same epsilon all the time. So we implement something, some kind of strategy of auto-adaptation, which will just, well, rewrite the expression incrementally when needed. So let me give a few examples. I do have probably, but this is in the mathematics system that we are developing. So here I introduce an infinitely large variable. Here you see a simple series, right? Here you see, here we are now going to do this product there. So you indeed see that I was computing more or less this triangle you saw before, the first term in e power x I compute 4, then for the second one only 3, for the third one only 2, and the last one only 1. So if you look at the fifth approximation, for instance, we get this thing. And if we now resubtract, well, this first term as an expansion in e power minus x, so we have some infinite cancellation going on. Well, basically there's no problem. It just subtracts term-wise. So here's something with a few logarithms. So here we have x log x log log x, and so here you see this example that I gave completely at the start of my talk. You see that this pretty quickly gives you complete asymptotic expansion, well, trans asymptotic expansion of this example. So now you may wonder a bit, if you look at these expressions, where do these O terms come up from? How did I put them there? And we'll come to that now. Because now there's another thing we can the funny thing about these meta expansions is that we can now actually act at two levels. At one level we are computing with trend series themselves, but we can also perform operations, meta operations, which will only work on the meta level. So for instance, call such an operation phi. We can study the interesting operations which will take an expander on input, give a new expander on output, but such that the trend series which is represented by these expanders is basically the same thing. We have already seen one such a thing when I multiply it with Z, for instance. Right? When I multiply it with Z, well, under substitution Z equal to 1, this represents the same trend series. So this basically means that if you look on your screen and if you apply this operation, then basically if you're computing at some fixed order, then you will get, well, the terms of one order less. So this will shorten basically what you see on your screen. You can also do the opposite thing. Take F, this thing here. This corresponds, well, you have to be a bit careful with the constant term, but this corresponds to exactly doing the opposite and looking a bit ahead, lengthening your expansion. But there are others. We can, if we look at our expander, and so we have the first term, second term, third term, and so on, and we look at the polynomials which corresponded, right? I just order them with respect to asymptotic magnitude. So this term is larger than this term, which is larger than that term, and so on. Then I tagged everything by the corresponding power. Now, of course, if I change powers here, when evaluating at Z equal 1, nothing changes. So let's change some powers. So we increase the power by the position in the polynomial here. So this is getting Z1 and so on to ZL. Well, the second one here, level first gets power 2 and so on. So what does this mean? That this thing, we now actually want to see it a bit later, right? So basically we're now looking at this object here. So when we do this, basically we're getting what I call dominant bias, where we're considering that the first terms in our asymptotic expansions are more important than the later terms. So the later terms, I give them a higher valuation in Z so that I will see them later. And yet more interesting operation is what I call stabilization. So if we look at an expander, and I look at two successive stages, then I can look at these two successive stages of expansion, which terms coincide. And I can make up a new expander, where I keep at the nth stage only those terms which coincide at stage n and n plus 1 or n minus 1. This still will converge ultimately to the same trend series, but somehow noise which can come up during the computations will be filtered out. So let's see, for instance, for this introductory example which we have here. So here you see the successive approximations. So here you see this is noise here, actually, right? This is precisely the noise that we want to filter out. So if we look now at if we do one step of stabilization, we see basically that this term occurs here but not there. So I will just throw it out. And that the second step of stabilization, I now have nobody there anymore, so these terms don't coincide, so I throw it out. Okay? In a similar way, one can print these objects in a nice way, which exposes this transfinite structure. You saw that I didn't just look at the first omega terms, but that you also got some grip on the terms which come after. So how does one do that? Well, again, we compare the expansions at two successive stages, and the points where differences occur, I color them in blue here, and then I just replace these blue things by big O terms. Okay, so this is how you get how you actually get the output that you see all the time. Now, what other operations can we have? Of course, we want now to do all operations we can do on transseries differentiation, composition, integration, etc. So many operations on transseries are called so-called strongly linear, which means that they are not just linear, but that they're linear for the infinite summation. We're working with infinite sums. Series are infinite sums, so things can be linear for infinite summation. So assume that we have some operation like differentiation, that we know how to compute the derivative of a transmonomial. Okay, this generally is going to be a transseries, not necessarily a transmonomial. It can be a series, complete. So now, if this mapping is nice, then we can extend it by strong linearity, and just map arbitrary transseries like that to what you would get by just applying this L to the transmonomials. And now how can we make up an expander for this? Well, we're going to imitate what we have done for multiplication. Multiplication, in particular, is a strongly linear operation. Multiplication with a fixed transseries, right? That's a strongly linear operation. And if you look at the nth term that you get by multiplying by a fixed generating series, well, then you just get the convolution products there. And that's exactly what we're going to do, except that now in the convolution product, if you're multiplying f and g, for instance, then here I would have something with g involved. I'm going just to substitute the qth term of what happens if I apply this linear operator. So this works, of course, well for differentiation, because I know how to differentiate iterated logarithms. I know how to differentiate exponentials. Composition, similarly. I know how to compose with iterated logarithm on the left. I know how to compose on the left with an exponential of something else. So this mere formula here, in all these cases, will just handle the cases of differentiation and composition. For integration, one has to do a little bit more work. Basically, you're first going to try to find the first term of the integral. So this is this asymptotic integration. Now, if your monomial is large, sufficiently large, then basically this is just dividing out by the logarithmic derivative. And otherwise, well, you have to do a bit more complicated process of so-called upward shifting. And I can form an operator which, for a transmonomial, gives me the first term of the integral. Now, this is not the integral. There may be other terms in the integral, but I have the first term. Nevertheless, this operator which does that, I can extend it by strong linearity. So this is some kind of approximation to integration. And then, in order to get the integral, I can just look at the difference between identity and differentiating this first term of the integral. I know that this difference is going to be small, because I wiped out the first term. I did well for the first term, so everything what remains is infinitesimally small. And then I just write down this thing now for at the operator level. So I know how to invert operators like 1 minus, I know how to invert something like 1 minus delta. So when I write that, I just get this formula for the integral. And now we're going to play the same game. We're going to now introduce expanders for operators. So this integral, I'm going to see it as a generating series with operator coefficients. And I reapply this to F, again in the similar form as for multiplication. So let's see some examples. I still have 4 minutes. So this is, related to the error function, right? Now this is already a bit more involved. This is the kind of thing you wouldn't do by hand anymore. Here you see, so this is 1 over, this is the integral over 1 over exp, and then 1 e power 2 x, the integral 2 power exp, and then so on. Now, we're taking this function here, and we're going to compose it with itself, and we get this. So here you see that we can also have infinite sums in the exponents of things here. So this is actually a transmonomial. Okay. So in the last very interesting operator is fixed points. So if we have any operator like this, which is well behaved with some conditions, then we can search for a solution to the equation g equal phi of g. And, again, using this diagonal argument, the nth approximator, I just take it to be the nth approximation of phi n-fold applied to zero. And one example where to use this is for discrete summation. So if you want to solve the functional equation f of x plus 1 minus fx is equal to gx. So this is, if for instance, you can do this for products too, right? If I want to have the gamma function, it satisfies gamma of x equal to x times gamma of x minus 1. So let me get some examples of that. So here you see the sum of x power 4. Here you see the product. So here you see that up to a constant, indeed, we see the usual formula, Stirling expansion, coming up. But of course, I can do this for anybody now. So I can also do this for solve the equation fx plus 1 equal log x times fx. Right, and then I get things like this. We can look at the this functional equation. So f of x equal to 1 plus f of log x over x. So this comes up naturally when studying these gaps. Many iterated more and more iterated logarithms coming in. So then there is a very secret relation that if you take that strange thing here and call it lambda and take lambda square plus 2 lambda prime, yeah, that you get something similar but with everybody all terms squared here. This is really a very intriguing phenomenon. Now here is a fixed point operator for this differential equation that I showed at the very beginning of my talk. And so here you, so this takes slightly more time maybe. Yeah, so there it is. So this is a solution to the differential equation. And here you have this functional equation, f of x is equal to 1 over x plus the derivative of f of x squared plus f of x of log x squared. Okay, let's go. Well, this is the kind of expansions you get in that case. And the very last one, I think I have to forget one. So this is again a functional equation, f of x equal to 1 over x plus f of x squared plus f of x power x. This is the last one. Okay. Ah, and there, this is a funny one, of course, because you can see higher and higher towers of exponentials occur now. And, yeah, so that's nasty. Example, right? So, well, thank you for your attention. I think I'll stop here.